The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files, and of course I am joined by the one and only Joe DeFalco. Joe, how are you doing?
Oh, fantastic.
And of course, we said we'd have him. We have him here with us, the king of Las Vegas, Mr. Kenny King. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, fellas.
Well, thank you, man. Do appreciate it. And let's get right to the start, Kenny. When did you first come in contact with Joe DeFalco?
I'd run into Joe like once or twice doing UWF shows, but then I remember the first time definitively like working with Joe was there was a spinoff called Vegas Extreme Wrestling, and I think if I'm not mistaken that was maybe like 2002, 2003. They ran a couple of shows at UWF Arena, and that was the first time that I'd actually like worked with and really really talked to Joe.
Joe, what were your first impressions of Kenny, and do you remember first meeting him?
Oh, absolutely. When I talk of Vegas Extreme, I could talk really bad about it, and I could talk really fondly about it. When I talk fondly about it, the fact of the matter is we had some major talent that went on to do stuff. We had, you know, as I said, Mike Knox, we had Nykerk, we had Bison Smith, we had Ace Steel, we had Kenny. Snuka Jr., the Riggs brothers, it was a good little something that was way different than what Rush was doing, because Rush was basically featuring, you know, a lot of his younger students and putting on some shows. So me, Jack Slammy, this guy Pete, we called Triple X from Chicago, and Kenny's favorite Boom Boom Kamini were all involved.
Boom Boom Kamini.
Yes. And we did the show, and we put together basically Kenny and Snuka Jr. were basically the top baby faces, you know, Nykerk and Knox. We kind of teamed them up before they ever teamed up themselves and became buddies. Huh. And, you know, we had some good times, but I remember Kenny specifically because I don't know how it came about, but he had a boy he used to come down with, and I jokingly put him as his manager, and we called him Lance Escalade. And Kenny was actually a heel then, so I'm incorrect. He was a heel because he was pretty young. He did the Tough Enough. He came in, worked with Rush. And I remember Lance Escalade used the biggest cell phone in the history of wrestling. I think it was bigger than Jim Cornette's to win matches early in Kenny's career.
Yeah, it was. Lance was a guy that God, he was like my best friend at the time. We lived together. We worked together. He was kind of like, man, what do you do on the weekends? He was like, well, I travel here and there and I do this wrestling. And, he was always cool and supportive of it. And I remember coming down one Friday and Joe was like, well, why don't you have Lance come down? You know, he came in and he had the used the aluminum foil on his teeth, and we found the biggest Zach Morris cell phone that we could find. And I would answer phone calls from my freaks during the heat portions of my matches, because I would have them so well in hand I could just answer cell phone calls back then. I'm not sure how many wins, how many losses, but I'm pretty sure I was successful under the Lance Escalade era.
Wow, and that was a baby face, Joe?
No. He was a heel. I was incorrect. Snuka Jr. was the main guy we used as the baby face. Kenny was finding his you know, he was finding his roots early on.
Finding myself as a young pro wrestler, figuring out that, you know, a young white meat, tough enough baby face wasn't necessarily my best, wasn't my best me.
You know, in that process of finding that side of you, what is it as a performer that takes you in that direction that makes you comfortable enough to explore those traits of, you know, being a heel and trying to build heat? Especially, is it because you had the tough enough exposure? Was it something that you could play off of to make the fans hate you?
Well, you know, it was at this point, it was a real learning experience for me because it was hit or miss. At this point, and early on, when I first started taking any bookings, because I worked for Rush, UWF, and trained there for a whole year after Tough Enough before I took any indie bookings. But early on in my career, I would get booked as a babyface in some places and as a heel in others, because in some places it would be, you know, the babyface, I'm the kid from MTV that comes in, and then, you know, the heel comes in and says, who's this guy? He doesn't know how to wrestle, blah, 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 blah. Or it could be the exact opposite, where I come in as the snot-nosed reality TV punk ass, and then, you know, challenge the top babyface. And so it was going both ways. So it was, I feel like that experience was real invaluable because I had to learn how to work both. A lot of young wrestlers only, you know, okay, I'm a baby face and that's it. But you got to, and I said, well, we trained on FSW. You have to learn how to work both, because you never know when you get to a place. Let's say you're in a car four deep and you're the fourth guy and you get a shot to wrestle that night. But you're the big heel in your company. And the guy says, well, you got to work baby face and you don't know how. Nah. So, for me, it was just experimenting, you know, and kind of finding myself, all right, tonight I'm the baby face and this is, you know, who I kind of have to be, and figuring out what works. And then, you know, in that night, the nights when I'm heel, and then analyzing and then being able to say, okay, and honing your craft to say, okay, what works as a baby face, what works as a heel, and does it work in the reverse, and all of those different things. And that's why young wrestlers have to work as much as they can, wherever they can, because they have to get as much experience to work out those kinks.
Let me ask you a really quick follow-up on that. You then went to my alma mater, and FSW now has one of those guys, Mr. Tom Howard, helping training guys at the school. But you went to UPW, and you had a match with The Miz, which was billed as a reality TV match. I don't remember, were you the baby in that?
Yeah, well, I think we had done three matches that weekend, and that was the UPW one. So it was three nights, and that one at UPW was the last night. So I think the first night was just an angle, and then we did one match in Arizona, Phoenix, I think it was, and I was the heel and that one. And then I think Rick said, you know what, I think I want you to be babyface in California.
Okay.
And so the one that we actually did for UPW in California was, I was a babyface.
Okay.
And Chavo actually came out and helped me win with the worst finisher. It was like a body slam that I tried to turn into like a slow plow, but it was terrible.
So, you know, just, I mean, it's a good time to touch on that. When you worked with a guy like Rick Bassman, do you see what I see in comparison with Joe DeFalco, that mind frame is kind of that same, like, independent genius mind?
Yeah, I do see a lot of similarities between Rick and Joe. I never got a chance to know Rick as well as I know Joe, but in my young career, getting a chance to interact with him and knowing that he was so influential in sending a lot of dudes to WWE and sending, you know, just at that point in wrestling, UPW was the big name on the West Coast.
Right.
So watching Rick and Joe, where they have the same kind of eye for future talent and, you know, be able to kind of cultivate and kind of bring guys along at their different speeds and kind of figure out what spots to put different guys. I feel like that is those are the real big similarities between Rick and Joe, seeing guys and saying, okay, I feel like that guy can work in this spot. And, you know, a good, very good example of this is Vegas' own Killer Cross.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. Now, Joe, when you decide to start FSW, how does Kenny figure into your process of thinking?
Well, by that time, we're into 2009, and I'm pretty sure we hadn't talked to each other in a while. But once we decided to start things up, you know, Kenny was the obvious choice to kind of be the face of the franchise. You know, even though the fact of the matter was, I was always going to be looking for talent. It didn't matter if it was Vegas, California, Arizona, as we know. But it's always good to have, you know, a mainstay. So the first order of business was, you know, getting Kenny into the mix. And at the time, locally, we didn't really have a lot. Funny Bone had done a lot of work in California. So he was another guy we were going to use. But the majority of talent for the first FSW show was out of town. I remember Kenny, we did an 8-man tournament to crown the first champion at the blistering hot Rancho Swap Meet. And Kenny's first round opponent was, I believe, at the time, GQ Gallo.
Yes, he was GQ Gallo at the time.
Yes.
Huh.
So Kenny was in there. Funny Bone was injured. So the final two ended up being Kenny and Derek Nykerk, and we utilized Funny Bone to get involved, and Kenny became the first FSW champion. And, you know, from then on, we weren't able to get the second show at the swap meet, and then Kenny went on. What's that?
I said, thank God we couldn't get another show at the damn swap meet.
Yeah. And after that, I believe Kenny wrestled the first Silver Nugget show in the main event against Disco Inferno for the title.
Was that Disco or was that Mike Modest?
No, you had Disco first, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, all right.
Or wait, maybe it wasn't, because I guess Snuka Jr. wrestled Disco and you worked Modest on the first show there, possibly?
I think that's might have been what it was, because I think me and Modest worked, and then it was because Uncle Jimmy was there, Big Snuka was there, and they did a deal, and so I think that might have been the main event, because we had Uncle Jimmy there for that one.
Okay, yeah, that's right. The Godfather was the second show where you guys did a promo together.
Right.
what? Kenny, at that point, because you had seasoning, what was it like for you to essentially be kind of the, you know, the centerpiece for something that is fresh, it's brand new? And a lot of times when you have someone as that first champion, if the product doesn't continue to thrive, then you kind of look and go, well, did we put the belt on the right person? Are people not reacting? What was it for you to take up that mantra and, you know, start to help this company build?
What are you, choking on bad weed over there? What's going on?
No, it's always good weed over here. It's never bad. Well, it was important to me because I had just moved back to Vegas. I moved to Vegas November of 2008. So when I first moved here, I was I moved here in November 2008, and I just signed my first Ring of Honor contract in like August of 2008. So I was still really trying to kind of get my feet wet and even trying to create a spot for myself in Ring of Honor with Brian Danielson, Austin Aries, Nigel McGuinness, all of these dudes there. Yeah. So coming here, there was, when I first got here, I didn't really see anything. You know, the whole UWF thing was done, and the only thing that was doing anything, I went over and saw Adrenaline Unleashed. And, you know, I went over to the warehouse, saw the six-sided ring, kind of saw, you know, I know Kathy, Allison Danger. I know her a little bit at that point. But I was like, yeah, I don't know. this is not going to be it. I really don't want to hang my hat here. So I kind of, you know, I kind of held off on really doing anything wrestling-wise. And I'm not even sure if you know, Joe, because I don't remember exactly sure how we linked back up, because there really wasn't anything going on. But I remember Joe saying to me, hey, look, I really want to, you know, get wrestling back up. You know, started in Vegas, and I want to do this is what I want to do. I want to bring new guys, and I want to just bring guys in. And there was literally a void. There was nothing going on. And I felt like this has always been a good place where if nothing else, there's a strong local demand for pro wrestling. So, you know, I was all the way in on the idea of let's start this promotion. Let's whatever you need from me. I'm in. Let's go. And then when he was telling me, well, I want you to be the champ and whatnot, you know, I just felt like that's this is obviously an honor. What, especially with, you know, Mike Modest and Disco and all these guys and all these other guys that could have very easily been, you know, the number one guy very early on. I just felt it was indicative. Joe kind of had a lot of confidence in me. And I had a lot of confidence in the company. So it was just kind of both of us doing what we do and loving wrestling and just kind of, you know, growing our relationship. And I think we just both knew that if we could keep the nonsense to a minimum, FSW could really grow.
So, Joe, what was your feelings about how it was coming together early on? Did you feel that this was something that FSW was going to be a successful company because you had the likes of guys like Kenny and Mike Modest? Was that the key to kind of keeping everything together in the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, we really didn't know what we had. We did the show at the SWAT meet, and we knew we had something because we had 231 people cramped into that with little to no advertising, promotions that were flyers that were put on telephone poles, and some of the local guys letting their friends know about it. And then when we got to go to the Silver Nugget, you know, that was a big move for us, because not only did we have Kenny and we used Snuka Jr., but we also utilized the Legends, and that's what got really, I believe, was the key to getting a fan base early. Because I remember we did a signing. We had Snuka Jr. and Jimmy Superfly Snuka at the mall. And, of course, the majority of people were getting Superfly Snuka autographs. And I adamantly remember there was an older gentleman there with, I guess, his grandson. And he was all beaming, excited to tell his grandkid about seeing Superfly Snuka jump off a cage, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, that showed that we ended up having a good family-friendly base, even though we had the Godfather showing up in the next show. But he was a living legend from Vegas who was a W. And I always felt, and I feel to this day, that if you don't know wrestling, it's very difficult. I would always go to, say, Sam's Town when they would air the pay-per-views, and I'd hand out a flyer, and a lot of people that you think are wrestling fans would take the flyer and literally just throw it on the floor right in front of you because, you know, they don't know who the majority of these people are. So to get some people interested, bringing in those name guys kind of makes people pay a little bit more attention. And we always felt with the talent that we had, all I needed to do was get you in the door once. And if I got you in the door, I think if you're a real wrestling fan, you will enjoy what you're seeing, because locally, you know, independent wrestling had, at that time, I would assume, had not as great a way of thinking that people have now because of NXT and Ring of Honor and all these other, you know, bigger than indie, less than WWE companies. that back in the day, you know, through Kenny, we would have a Roderick Strong, and it would be a small percentage of the fan base that would love Roderick Strong because he was the Ring of Honor guy, but a lot of the fans had no idea who he was. So we felt by bringing in the best talent, like having the Young Bucks on a show and, you know, using a guy like Brandon Gatson and then Brian Cage in 2010 and Sean Ricker, you know, a lot of these guys, the Reno Scum, it's like you look at our champions from day one, you know, it's a who's who, you know, 10 years later of guys that basically got their first big start in FSW.
Kenny, what in those the early times there at the beginning, what did you see as your favorite match of that time? Was there something that stood out to you or someone you worked with that was just something that was special, maybe helping you get along in your career, learn the ring, you know, a little bit more, season you a little bit more, or just someone who was really fun to work?
I really had a really great time working with Michael Modest. When I was coming up as a young wrestler, especially on the West Coast, Michael Modest and Donovan Morgan were the guys, you know what I mean? Two American Gaijin that went to Japan and just started kicking ass. And, you know, they had Pro Wrestling Iron in California, and they would only accept certain students. So, like, when I was coming up, those were, you know, the Tom Howards. Those were the guys that you looked up to. Like, man, if I ever get an opportunity to work or learn from this guy. And, you know, as Mike was here and Mike was teaching and me getting an opportunity to work with Mike in the beginning of of this FSW thing, I learned so much. I got to, you know, do higher level things because for the most part it was, you know, it was a couple of guys that had a lot of experience, but it was mostly guys that didn't have a lot of experience. So it wasn't a whole lot of times where I wouldn't be in a teaching capacity in the match. But with Mike, I could, you know, I could lay back and actually let him, you know, teach me and lead me. And we did that on a few occasions where we just kind of did, you know, what we call the walk and talk. And we just didn't call anything. We just did everything out there. And that was, you know, some of the first times I can remember doing that successfully and doing it well. We changed the finish one time, mid-match, you know what I mean? Like, those are things that you can, that when a guy does with you, it proves that, hey, he trusts you to do this on the fly, and not mess up the match or mess up the, you know, the flow for everybody who's watching. So I learned a whole lot working with Mike those couple times.
Joe, what are your memories of Kenny's experiences with Mike Modest? Obviously, Modest is the person who would eventually take the belt off of Kenny. What were your thoughts about having those two together?
Well, the funny thing is, when Modest took the belt from Kenny, that wasn't what the plan was. The plan was for Derek Nykerk to take the belt off Kenny. And I don't believe we knew till like the night before that Modest was going to step in. And at that time, we felt, you know, it was time to make the move. Kenny had held the title for, you know, I think it was a year and 6 days. And, you know, it was time. And, you know, obviously, you know, with Modest, I may have had my ups and downs, but I check out some of that old footage and some of that shit is hilarious. He played like the most dastardly piece of shit heel, but then he played like one of the funniest heels you'll ever see anyway. And it was like, you know, unfortunately, you know, Mike got the opportunity in WCW, and before he had a chance to breathe, you know, they sold the company to WWF, and he was kind of done in the United States. You know, he had a great run in Japan, but a lot of the U.S. fans didn't really have the opportunity. You know, Mike Modest is one of the best heels, you know, in wrestling.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were fortunate, which, you know, that helped make Kenny's baby face better.
Right.
you know, what is it, you know, being that you at this time had been used to television and you had national exposure, people started knowing who you were. What was it like being in Vegas? And at that point, did you still have to have, you know, jobs to supplement your income?
Yeah, I mean, I...
we know Kenny's long-standing as a Chippendale.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was always... The whole goal was always originally to just always support myself for pro wrestling, but those early ROH contracts were not cutting it. So, you know, I first moved back to Vegas, like I said, like late 2008, early 2009, and I was kind of just trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I ran into a buddy of mine that I went on tour with Chippendales with in like 2006, and he was like, "You're back," and I was like, "Yeah." So then he called the director, and I went over there and I started working there, and I worked at Chippendales until 2015. I was even doing that 4 days a week, and then flying to Orlando and doing Impact 3 days a week. So I was really, really on it for a while.
Does it offend you that in a film like Magic Mike that Kevin Nash gets cast as a stripper and you don't get the love?
Oh, no, I don't give a shit about that. you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Kevin Nash wasn't on The Bachelorette, yo.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Nash wasn't on four of the top-selling calendars in the world either. So,
yeah.
No, I mean, Magic Mike and Chippendales are two different, it's two different lanes. Everybody's got their own lane.
But it is, you know, I bring it up because it is entertainment and movies and... You know, you've had a chance to, you know, get a chance to be in front of the camera like that as an entertainer. Do you enjoy that process of, you know, whether it be reality TV or, you know, film or television, of taping? Or to you, does wrestling feed into that... that part of the entertainer that needs that live audience and loves that feedback?
Well, I'm all of it. Like, I was a film actor as a child, and I was also a theater major. So I've been in front of Nickelodeon crowds, in front of live crowds. So, you know, it's all of those things. It's me as a complete entertainer. Learning from the theater is what I think gives me the edge in pro wrestling and a lot of other things, because you have to be able to do it in one take. You have to be able to do it right away. You have to be able to improvise and be fluid. A lot of people that are just kind of come up in film have to do it three or four times before they can do their best take, you know. So it's all the process. It's a good thing to be in front of a live audience, but it's also a good thing to have a couple times to do it the right way.
Let me ask you, you mentioned a key word there, and that's improvisation. As a teacher and as, you know, someone that guys will come up and maybe ask your advice on how their match went, or maybe you're in the ring with them, even calling a match, you know, live in the ring, how important is it, and do you emphasize improvisation to the young guys who are, you know, learning the trait? Because that's such an important part of being able to feel things.
I mean, life is a lot like pro wrestling. No matter how well you plan things out, no matter how much, you know, meticulously you draw out each step, chances are it's not going to go according to plan. And the easier you are with that, the more comfortable you are with that idea, the better off you'll be. So I always tell, you know, my students or guys who I'm working with, hey, man, it's okay to have a plan B, or it may not go the way that you think it's going to go. So that's okay. Improvisation it leads to some of the best moments in pro wrestling. So I think everybody should be at least well-versed, comfortable with it, if not well-versed in it.
Joe, do you have a favorite moment of Kenny's that Kenny improvised something?
Offhand, if he didn't tell me that he improvised it, I might not have known. You know, the great thing is, you know, a lot of times when there's a screw up or there's stuff going on, you can tell. But, you know, the best wrestlers can not only cover it up for the fans, but they can, you know, cover it up, you know, when there's the watching eye of the promoter. You know, of course, there's things that change. There does stuff, you know, whether Kenny's in a match and Rush blows his comeback and, you know, Kenny's not very excited when he comes back and is looking to punch something. You know, things like that. A lot of crazy things happen.
Kenny, is there anything that sticks out to your mind, like any type of even like a promo or something that you had to call in the ring or an incident like that? Where, you know, like you're in the middle and then you get back and you're just like, motherfucker.
Well, there's something happened with Matt Hardy. I can't remember what it was. Me and Matt were wrestling.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what happened. Matt didn't kick out before the three.
Oh, yeah. There's that, right? So, yeah, it was with the finish, right? It was Matt didn't kick out and Matt was supposed to kick out. And I'm not exactly sure how we covered that.
Yeah, so this was the deal. Cross had some other obligations, so we did like a kidnapping angle or some whatever it was. So I decided that we were going to do what the UFC likes to do, and we were going to have the interim heavyweight champion. And, of course, Paulie Cover, because he was the evil commissioner at the time, he decided that he was just going to hand the belt to Matt Hardy. So, of course, I had to come out and say, you know, I'm paying Matt Hardy a lot of money to be here. We're not just going to hand him the belt and he's going to leave. We're going to have a match for the interim heavyweight champion. And whoever wins then would have to wrestle Cross. It's big money in UFC. It's like, hey, this is a good idea. I kind of like it. So we do the match. And quickly the match goes. Kenny hits a move. The referee counts 1, 2, 3, and Matt doesn't kick out. And everybody's looking around, and we're like, what the fuck? And since Paulie's the evil commissioner, I think he made himself the referee, and they basically laid out the ref or did something, and they restarted the match. And it was crazy because later on, nobody was pissed off that Kenny didn't win the match. Like, it was like they were mad at Paulie, but nobody was screaming like, oh, this was bullshit. Because most of the time when a referee counts 2 3/4 and it's their guy, you know, they lambaste the ref with that was 3 counts. And it was like the weirdest moment. You know, it was weirder than when ref Tommy didn't ring the bell and we had new tag champions because he didn't call for the bell on the time limit draw. So Matt Hardy went on to win. Kenny, everybody forgot that Kenny actually really did win. And we moved on to Hardy versus Cross in a cage match at the next show.
But that's an example of when you have, you know, something that happens, but then you have the performers that are able to kind of draw your attention away from it. Hey, we got some, and then we finished the rest of the match. And no, yeah, like Joe said, nobody even remembered. Nobody even knew. So what we were doing from that point on, it was higher, you know what I mean? It was much more of a climax than, hey, Matt, why the hell didn't you kick out?
You know,
and then there's Rush. Not
maybe you concussed him and we didn't know about it, but we let the match continue. I don't know.
No. That's that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen in FSW.
That's right.
That doesn't happen. And then there was Rush for getting his entire comeback and me having to spine bust myself. And I mean, I don't know. Like, you got one job, right? I did the whole rest of the match. And I love him. I love Rush to absolute death. I think Gary Mills is is a guy who in my career is very, very important, because if I don't get an email from Johnny Rage to come to the Las Vegas Pro Wrestling Academy and, you know, Gary says, hey, man, I'll exchange your tuition for you just endorsing me on, I don't know, it might have been MySpace at that point. I don't remember what it was. I don't get a chance to you know, train with Scott Casey, with not Nick Bockwinkel. I don't get a chance to meet Joe DeFalco. So, you know, Gary Miles Rush is not only a Vegas Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer in my heart.
Yeah, and if you know Rush, waiving a tuition fee is a very difficult process in his life.
Okay. It's almost as difficult as getting Joe DeFalco to waive one.
What are you talking about? Ask Chris Bay.
Okay. Boy, Chris Bay on blast on the DeFalco file.
You know, speaking of someone like Bay, Kenny, how does that make you feel when you see someone walk into the school with ambition and, you know, they're green as anything else, but you know that passion's there? How does it make you feel to help mold someone like a Chris Bay or like a Kevin Cross?
It makes me feel great. It's the reason why I do it, right? Because when I am in these intermediate, these beginning, these advanced classes, I see myself. I see what it was like before contracts and politics and finishes and promoter, you know what I mean? It's just the raw, I love this. This hurts my body. I have to work 6 or 7 hours at a job that I hate just to get here to let somebody pound the hell out of me. You know, for 4 hours at a day, there's a raw energy in that stage of a pro wrestler that I love. I mean, I feed off it. It gives me energy to push them and to see where Bay was. I remember teaching Chris Bay how to throw dropkick, and I can remember holding the pad up. It's like one of those, you know, like one of those shoulder pads, but it's like an arm pad, like American Gladiators on Joust, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm holding up relatively high, like, okay, this is how she taught him the mechanics. And, okay, you know, aim here, because Chris is a shorter dude, right? And Chris Bay throws a dropkick above my head. So I'm saying to myself, oh, shit, this kid has got something. And from that point, you know, just watching Chris mold from a guy who's insanely athletic to a guy who's now he's starting to put it together as far as his personality, to a guy who's coming into his own, to where he's at now. I mean, the guy is a former X Division champion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's my old belt. That was one of the things that warmed my heart to see him to hold that championship. So it's you know, Cross especially too, man. I've had long conversations with Cross about, you know, where he was going and where how I saw him going and his journey. And you know, Cross has called me and asked me, you know, about decisions, major decisions that he's made. It's great, because these are good guys. These are guys that work hard at this shit. They really want it. And they're not dudes that are going to be cancerous to the business. So the more guys we can get like Chris Bay, Killer Cross in the wrestling business, I think the better.
How did you start with training guys? Did the Snake Pit, was that something that you got brought into, or
what Snake Pit? What are you talking about?
The former Snake Pit.
But no, we were future stars of wrestling in 2009.
Okay.
The Snake Pit didn't come along till like 2015.
Okay, Matt, you gonna have us sit up here for a history lesson if you don't watch out.
You know, we started. We're the Vegas company. We had Mike Modis as our main trainer for a long time, and, you know, all I could say about Mike on the falling out was, you know, he just got tired of it, you know, and there was issues with people going to the other company, 3PW, and I had to make a decision that was going to be best for Future Stars of Wrestling. I remember talking to Tyshawn Prince at the time, and I believe the FSW wrestlers that were still around had a meeting, and the decision was made that to move forward, sometimes you got to fire the manager. And we decided to make the change, and the first person I call was Kenny, and I'm like, hey, bro, I need you. It's like, this is what's going on. We really want to keep this going. We're doing a great job. You know, we had just pretty much sold out Sam's Town probably, you know, a few weeks earlier. So there was no doubt FSW was on top of its game. But we needed somebody, because at the time, a lot of the advanced students were probably, you know, running a lot of the training classes, and we had to change that up. And I asked Kenny, he was definitely interested, and, you know, we put it together, and then we got Kenny in as the main trainer at FSW, and then everything was, you know, smooth sailing, and then we had some additions, obviously. We brought Sin Bodhi and his Snake Pit crew over to FSW. And, you know, now we have a crew that includes TJ Perkins and Sean Davari, as well as Cody and Remy, who've been with us forever. Sin, D'Lo's actually training class today, but D'Lo he's real busy class? Doing the impact stuff. What's that?
I said D'Lo's training? That's good.
Yeah, D'Lo's training as a thank you to the students who helped him move a few weeks ago, plus Sin's working OVW tonight.
That's okay.
So, Kenny, how was it when you got that call to see that you're going to be entrusted and, hey, Mike is, you know, out. We want you. Like, is that just kind of like just the strangest thing to feel that here you are, you've worked with Modest, you've learned from him. Now you're essentially going to be replacing him and being the lifeblood to, you know, keep the vein going to the feeding of making new stars.
Well, before Kenny answers, I want to let him know that he was actually the second choice, but superstar Mike Lane was not available.
That's fair. That's fair. And being the recipient of lots of superstar Mike Lane training sessions, I think everything ended up for the best. no shit about superstar Mike Lane. I got lots of love. I learned a lot from superstar Mike Lane too. That's no shoot. You know, I had been, and it kind of started a couple of years before where I had, you know, asked Joe if I could come in, you know, train with some of the guys and I think this was when I was on like a 6-month sabbatical, I think from TNA at one point where I wasn't being used on TV. And I was just like, well, I need to be able to kind of keep in shape. And just in case they happen to need a guy that they signed. And it kind of started off like that. I would go in with these guys and I kind of train with them. And then, before, you know, too long, I wasn't training so much with them as I was training them. And then I guess my confidence kind of grew as then, you know, then guys at FSW shows would come up to me and, you know, instead of this usual, hey, did you watch my match? Or they would ask veterans, you know, now guys are asking me about certain spots. Hey, what do you think I could do here? Or what would you do if you were doing this? And now I'm, you know, low key training dudes at shows. So, it had been happening for a while at this point, and by the time that, you know, Joe had called me and told me what was going on with Mike, and I'd had an idea because a lot of the guys had called me. Most of the guys from the FSW roster had called me regarding the whole, you know, FSW 3PW situation long before it kind of came to a head. So I was kind of aware of it, and I was just, you know, just trying to – I talked to Joe, and I'd, you know, give him my feelings on it, and I was just kind of just, you know, just seeing what was going to take place. And when Mike was out and Joe has decided that he wanted me to come in, I just, you know, at this point I'm all the way in on FSW. So, I'm as invested in this, as anybody else. And if it takes for me to come in and, you know, we can establish a board as far as what training, how we're going to train people and who's training and who's not, and the way we're going to train people and the way that we're going to continue to run the school. I was all in because I want this company to succeed. This is, you know, this is my baby as well. And I know how much hard work Joe and Rocky and, you know, countless other people have put in to make sure that FSW succeeds. So coming in and training guys was probably the least I could do.
Joe, what was your feelings while, you know, Kenny was doing his TNA stuff and then doing the Ring of Honor stuff? What were your feelings about having someone as solid as him really kind of be almost a backbone or a foundation that you could turn to at any point and say, hey, here's what I'm encountering. What's your advice or can you help on this? What was it like to have Kenny as a presence like that?
Well, being that I've known Kenny for, you know, 20 years, and at that point it was probably 13 or 14, you know, I watched him. You know, when we watched Tough Enough, you saw a lot of guys that got in the spotlight, and they all kind of disappeared. You know, I know it's weird to say, but I think Kenny's probably had a longer career because he didn't get signed by WWE. Like, he worked at it. Most of those guys, they were just taking a shot at trying to be a WWF superstar. Yeah. And Kenny could have just gave up. He could have quit. And then all of a sudden, you know, he was down in Florida and he got FIP, which got him into Ring of Honor, which got him into TNA, which got him back into Ring of Honor. And Kenny had to work for everything. He wasn't given, you know, anything he got. So we knew the work ethic was there to begin with. Plus, Kenny would come in. So it wasn't like, hey, Kenny, I know you've never done this before. You know, Kenny used to come in probably on the average of like once a month, if I remember correctly. And we'd have like a separate session to where, you know, Kenny would come in. And it was funny because that was also a contingent of stuff that when Mike Modest had the clash toward the end when he was not as excited about being there, you know, five or six guys would show up. All of a sudden we'd say, hey, Kenny King's going to be training tonight, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden there's 20 people there. So the fact of the matter was, it's kind of like when we dealt with Disco and when Matt Hardy was around, you could see that they were excited to teach. Well, sometimes some people just felt it as it was their job and that's what they had to do. You know, it's much more enjoyable training and being with somebody that genuinely wants to help you get better and wants to see you, you know, achieve your goals.
Yeah. Kenny, for you, what is the most rewarding part about doing that, about being a trainer, being a teacher?
It is seeing people overcome their own bullshit and watch people exceed their limitations. God, I can't remember the guy's name. He comes around and I see him. I can see his face in my head, but I can't remember his name. But long story short, we're in class one day and I think I was doing some drill that had to do with drop down leapfrog into something, right? And then, you know, we're going through it, and then he comes through and he's like, hey, can I do this? I said, well, you could do, I don't know, the pass by or something, but we're doing drop down leapfrogs. He's like, well, the problem is I don't do leapfrogs. Well, the problem is I don't see how you're going to be a pro wrestler if you don't do leapfrogs. What do you mean you don't do leapfrogs? This is the basic shit. So we're in intermediate classes and you're telling me you don't do leapfrogs. So, you know, and that's a crossroads, right? Like that is either there's some trainers that would be like, well, you don't do leapfrogs, get your ass out of my ring until you know how to do leapfrogs, right? But I stopped with him and we took about, you know, I stopped everybody else because everybody, it was an easy drill. It was early on and everybody knew how to do it, but I was just going through it. And I stopped and I took about 5 to 10 extra minutes and we went through basic, you know, how to, the timing and how does, when do you jump and how to jump and all of these things. And at the end of 10 minutes, this kid who said, I don't do leapfrogs, I can't do leapfrogs, was doing drop down leapfrogs. So, you know, that's the part of it that really pops me, is when, you know, you came into training today with your brain saying that you couldn't do draw, you don't do leapfrogs, I can't do leapfrogs because of whatever. Now you can do the shit. So what else can you do that you thought that you couldn't do today? And, you know, and sometimes that inspires me, because I can just look at that and go, well, damn, what did you tell yourself you couldn't do? So it's watching them in that stage, man. It really fires me up again about pro wrestling, and because November will be 19 years, and you know, it can be a little, you can get a little jaded after a while, and all of those things. But watching guys that, you know, don't care, yeah, care about driving, you know, 12 hours for $40 and all those things I used to not care about, that gives me a little bit more inspiration.
Joe, what are some of the standout moments that you associate with Kenny in the ring?
I think I lost it. Was that the end of the question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you had a breath in there like you were about to say something else. But, you know, there's a few, you know, and some of them weren't good ones. I remember we brought Sean Ricker back. Kenny was off TV, and Sean Ricker was just coming back from WWE Developmental, and we were all excited. They were having a match at the Silverton, and it was one of the worst matches I think both of those guys ever had. they were blown up like 30 seconds into the match. It was like, what the fuck? What a shit fest this has become.
You remember
that match, Kenny?
Yeah.
It was me and Cage, or me and Ricker?
Well, actually, one with Cage, too.
Yeah, I can remember being blown up with Cage real bad, real early, like Jesus Christ. I remember coming back and saying, sorry, Joe, that was pitiful. But I don't know about, I remember one with Remy and Ricker, that we went out there and went a million miles an hour and probably came back about 5 minutes early.
Oh, yeah, and I remember that one too at Sam's Town, where I was like, what the fuck? It was like a six minute match or something. And when it was for probably the Elite title at the time.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, we had about 13 minutes worth of stuff, but we put it into 7 minutes.
Oh, shit.
You know, when it comes to good memories, I remember Kenny was wrestling Gregory Sharp. I don't know if it was a tag match. Maybe it was a tag. It might have been you and Rush against cold-hearted Corey Phillips and Gregory Sharp.
Cold-hearted Corey Phillips,
yes,
and Gregory.
That,
yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, he went off the deep end. But I remember I was, you know, across where the commentary was, and I saw Kenny firing away, and I literally thought that Sharp must have pissed him off, because I swore that Kenny was fucking him up. And he wasn't, and I was like, wow. Man, that looked really, really good. And because I remember at one time we were going to call Gregory Sharp Gregory King and call him his younger brother.
I do remember that, because I'd worn his gear one time, because I think either my gear got stolen or my gear hadn't come through. I'd flown back and my gear hadn't come through with my luggage or something like that.
You know, there was definitely some good stuff. I remember when we... I always remember when that Tyshawn Prince came in, you know, and his name was Tyshawn Whitson. Immediately, I'm like, Tyshawn Prince, because there was Tayshawn Prince, the basketball player.
Yeah,
but people,
yeah,
just think that was the reason why. But at the time, I knew there was Kenny King. So it's like, if you have a king, why wouldn't we have a prince, which we utilized later on, and they became a really good tag team, and we called them the Royal Court. And they wrestled when we were doing the shows in Arizona. They got to wrestle Lance Hoyt and Brian Cage. And then I remember after a show at Sam's Town, the buzz was so good that we actually, because usually, you know, big money, big dollars, Kenny King, you know, a small school show, you know, is usually out of that price range. But we brought him in to wrestle the Commandos, if you remember, in the main event. It was like a packed house at the school that we couldn't squeeze any more people in.
Wow. I do remember that.
What's some of your fondest memories, Kenny? Is there you know, any matches or anything?
Hey, I got one more.
I'm sorry.
More.
All right.
I was walking with my wife in Mesquite. We had just finished the show, and Kenny was walking with his girl toward the elevators, and I just remember him yelling and screaming and pulling off his shirt. You remember that one, Kenny?
I think these are supposed to be in-ring memories, Joe.
Oh, my bad. Okay. It was a good time. It was a good time. It was after a hard-fought victory.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with celebration, yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was celebrating. I'm pretty sure. Let's see. I really enjoyed me and Cross in the cage. I liked... I remember having a lot of fun. I think it was me and Matt Hardy against Robbie E. And do you remember who the fourth was in that match, Joe?
Yeah, EC3.
Was that EC3 in that match? Well,
because Jesse didn't want to work.
Yeah, okay.
EC3 with the managerial combination of Stu Stone and your boy Johnny Ferrari.
Yeah, I do remember Ferrari being out there, and I remember having a blast in that match. That was a great time. What else was a good match? Myself versus Jacob the Kid. Jacob Austin Young was a
good match. That was in Mesquite when he was the No Limits champion.
Yup. What else? What else is the Hater Nation was a big fun period of time.
The evil heel turn when you took out Funny Bone for Legacy to win the cash in the case.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of Kenny moments in FSW history. No Limits champ, not no. That was the only one you didn't win. The heavyweight champion. We created a tournament for the Elite Championship. Where it was the first time Brian Cage really got a big spot in FSW. You guys, we did a four-way elimination that I believe had Johnny Goodtime and Tony Nese in it.
Tony Nese? I don't know if I've ever wrestled Tony Nese.
Yeah, it was a four-way elimination when you won the Elite title at Samstown.
Okay, if you say yeah, so. I was there.
Yeah, Tony Nese beat Sinbo. First round. No, sorry. He beat Johnny Yuma in the first round.
Okay. I just don't ever remember having wrestled Tony Nese, especially in a four-way.
Yes. And you and Cage were the final two, and now currently Kenny was the mystery partner at the anniversary show, and he is now one half of the FSW Tag Team Champions.
Yeah. I had to show Shogun Jones what it meant to be a champion.
Let's talk really quick about you and Shogun. Joe, what was your recollection when, before you had them tagging together, they wrestled each other at the anniversary show, and it was supposed to be a pinfall victory for Shogun, is that correct?
It was a weird finish. Somehow the sword got involved, and it ended up being a count out. I just remember I was sitting on commentary. I'm like, this isn't going to be the finish, is it? And then it was the finish, and I was like, oh, okay, that was really weird. Like Shogun was going to perform Harikari or Harry Carey on Kenny in that match.
Yeah, I'm not sure about how that went, but I do remember this is where Joe and I sometimes we differ on finishes, and this is where this is also why our creative relationship is so great, because sometimes Joe says, all right, man, whatever, that's what you think, and I just feel like there's money in a big time Shogun Jones Kenny King match, so yeah. Why give away a pinfall on a throwaway when we could build? It was something that left the door open for another match. I can't remember exactly how the finish went, but it was to leave the door open for us to have a much better and a much bigger match.
And obviously,
well, at this point, he's 100% correct, because now that they're together,
right,
as tag team champions, now it could possibly, you know, if things don't work out down the line, you got Shogun, you know, the hot shot youngster who may feel that, you know, he's learned more than enough. You know, Mr. Miyagi and the Karate Kid, you know, Cobra Kai's back, you know. Sometimes good is bad and bad is good.
Right, right. Well, sometimes, Joe, you just got to trust me. And see, look what happens.
Well, you know, what is it for you, Kenny, to see guys like Shogun, Bay, Ice Williams? You know, there's just so many talented African-American wrestlers that are in Vegas or coming out of Vegas. What does that mean to you? Because I know, you know, back when I was training in 2000, you know, right around the time you started training, there wasn't really a heavy African-American presence. And now there's so much more opportunity. Is this something that you see, you know, that makes you proud to see that these young guys are getting a chance, A, to learn from you, and B, kind of carry that mantle into the next generation?
Well, it's twofold, right? It's one, it makes me happy because it's, you know, the company that Joe and I have grown is a company that it doesn't matter who you are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can be white, black, male, female. If you come in, you bust your ass, and you really want to learn and you want to get better, excuse me, then the opportunities are right there. So that has always been, you know, first and foremost, one of the things that made me most proud about FSW. Now seeing the younger generation and seeing more talented black wrestlers who don't, who, you know, and I don't know if it's started with my generation, but maybe it did, who have character ideas outside of the norm.
Right? Yeah.
Who, you know, one guy wants to be a Shogun. This guy wants to be the ultimate finesser. This guy was a, you know, Jace Battle was a damn anime character. You know,
yeah.
So you have guys who want to be whoever they want to be, as far as character wise. And that makes me happy. And that makes me, what's the word I'm looking for? Encouraged going into the future, right? That,
yeah.
that guys who, no matter who, you're going to be able to be. If you're a black dude who's an athletic wrestler, you're not going to have to be a high stepping big mouth. You know what I mean? You can be an introvert who's a computer nerd, and if you are talented at getting that over, the character will work. So,
yeah.
And that necessarily isn't something that was possible, I think, when I was breaking in.
Joe, is there anything that stands out in your mind, a time that you guys really just disagreed?
No, not really, because as Kenny will attest, I'm very open-minded. You know, if there's an idea on the table and somebody else comes up with an idea and I believe it's going to go and do pretty much where I wanted it to end up, I'm always going to try to make the other person happy. It's like, if I got this idea and then Kenny's got the idea and Kenny's idea leads to the same spot, well, I think Kenny, or, and maybe not Kenny, because Kenny is a true professional. He's been there. He's got to do what everybody says. But for the younger guys, it feels like they're part of the creative spot that they may work just a little bit harder unconsciously to make sure it works, because we're going with their idea. Now, in most cases, those ideas have worked. And in some of those cases, they've turned out to be the shits. And when they're the shits, I'm going to be more than happy to let them know it was the shits. You know? So, you know, we've done some angles and some things that were different than I'd want to do. Or there's a few things my cohort Remy Marcel wants to do, and then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, that fucking shit the bed.
Kenny, any recollections of anything that you ever came up with that was successful, or something that you might have come up with as an idea that just was awful?
I'm trying to think. Maybe the time you were supposed to put over a loony bin? I don't know. I can't think of much.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was awful. You know, I can't think of anything that regarding me creatively that that, you know, with Joe, it's usually like, all right, man, if this is what you need, it's fine. Unless it's, I mean, there's nothing that's anything that's too ridiculous. I usually come to Joe and say, hey, man, this isn't going to work. But I can't remember anything that I was like, oh, hell no, have you lost your mind? But I do. I think where Joe and I usually differ the most, and Joe will probably tell you this, is Joe's too nice about a lot of shit. And there's times where Joe's, you know, there's eight dudes in between two matches, and I'm like, why you got all these dudes in these damn matches, man? Like, just cut for. Well, you know, these guys got this guy did this, and this guy. You know, I feel like I'm like, you don't know owe anybody anything. There doesn't need to be two six ways back to back just to get guys on, right? But that's just me looking at the card and figuring out what's best for the show. And Joe, who has every right to look at the card and say what's best for the show, is saying, well, what's best for the guys around? Like, these guys are here. How can I use them? How can I make this guy, give this guy an opportunity to get over? And that's what Joe does. And, you know, Joe, there are, you know, there's lots of guys who have opinions about Joe. And anytime they express those opinions to me, I'll always give this one back. But Joe will always give you an opportunity to get over.
Yeah.
So if you're not using your opportunity to get over, then look at that. Don't look at the, oh, Joe's doing this, Joe's doing that. Are you getting the opportunity to get over? Is somebody else not getting that opportunity? So how can you change that? Even what? At the detriment to the show. Joe will have a damn show 4 hours long because he's got to have, you know, four-way, 3 6-man tags, 2 8-man tags. Like, Joe, what the hell is all these damn people doing here? I want to get paid to go home.
You know, to add on to what Kenny said, actually, the pandemic has made me agree with Kenny a lot more. It's like, you know what? I put in a lot of time, a lot of effort. I put up a lot of my money along with Rocky. And it's like, if you're not grateful for what you have, I'm not going to go out on a limb anymore. You know, it's the bottom line is I put 24/7 into FSW. If you can't put a few hours a week into it, it's like guys not training and guys just showing up. We have one of our younger guys now, very talented, young, up and coming. You know, my kid likes him a lot. Remy likes him a lot. And it's like, oh, well, what about him? And I'm like, well, unfortunately, he's only been here like once in the last month. You know, he comes up from blah, 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 and it's an hour away. I'm like, I don't care. Does he want to be a wrestler? It's like, you have to put in the time and effort. And, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, we have a lot of dudes, and a lot of dudes are good. And it's like, when you have guys like the Suavecitos and Adriel and Lazarus and, you know, Sandra Moon and Maserati and Estrella, and there's all these younger people, as well as trying to bring in some great talent from the outside, like an Andy Brown, who doesn't get on enough, even though he does great business when he's here. You know, Tito and Che are one of the better tag teams on the West Coast. And I love those guys. And I just sometimes don't have spots for them because I'm always trying to make sure at least the local guys get it. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, with stuff going on now, some of those local guys have made their choice on where their allegiances are. Well, and a couple of them were in a really good position with us, but I don't really foresee using them when I can use a guy like Adrian Quest, who's dying to get on a show, and every time he's on the show, he performs awesomely.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kenny, that's one of my quotes to everybody whenever I'm yapping or having to say something with the students. It's always, you know, Kenny says I'm too nice. And, you know, I'm trying to stop that.
You know, speaking about young talent and matches, Kenny, when are we going to see you and Damian Drake in the ring?
You know, I've been seeing Damian Drake with his freaking little, you know, with his little messages, his videos. And, you know, I've been largely ignoring him because, man, like, I don't really understand this kid, right? Like, I don't know Damian Drake. I know Bret Hyde. You know, this kid was running around in my knees when his dad was learning how to take bumps in the UWF. And, you know, I was very happy to take him under my wing and train him. And he was doing great. I was happy to see him with, you know, he's doing the same with Spider. Now this kid, his attitude is bad. He's with this kid Vandegrift. So, you know, whenever we can make this thing happen, if they want a shot at the tag belts, I don't have any problems just one-on-one, you know. That is not necessarily a question for me. That would be a question for the guy on the other end of this phone, Joe DeFalco, because he books the matches. I just show up my boots.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I don't foresee Damian Drake and Kenny King having a singles match right now because Kenny is one half of the tag team champions. The Unguided have kind of establish themselves. The last team that took on Kenny and Shogun was the Bonus Boys, so you know they need to get back in line. And right now I'm looking at two teams, and I think either one of those teams would be a great match. And that's Death Proof, which is Jacob Austin Young and Cutthroat Cody. But I think we need to settle that first to see who really is the number one contender. And I think the winner of that match would be next in line for the opportunity to wrestle Kenny and Shogun. And, you know, either or, you know, I think it would be a great match.
So you heard that, Damian Drake. Wait your turn, kid. Wipe your mouth. You got drool coming outside your mouth. Wait your turn.
Joe, are there any names from the past that you can think of that might spark something in Kenny's memory?
Any names from the past? They might be from the present. You know, we both, we're both maybe one of the few people because, you know, he sometimes rubs people the wrong way, but I know we're both, we both like Austin Aries a lot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
And you know, as we sit, we're talking, you know, we're still talking about getting this TV deal going. And the first person I'm going to reach out to be the color commentator is Austin Aries. You know, he did it for us at the last Mecca show, the last show before we wrapped everything up in this country. And he was beyond tremendous. So, you know, another guy that we got into FSW on more than one occasion, and that was because specifically of Kenny. You know, Roderick came in, he did a seminar, he worked Kenny, but later on we had him to have the opportunity to work Brian Cage as well as Sean Ricker in matches.
Yeah, another good friend of mine. He's, you know, the guys that I don't see very often because of our travel schedule, but Roddy and I, really, really good friends. I'm nothing but happy and proud of Roddy and all the success in NXT.
Did you first come across Roddy in Florida?
Yeah, I first came across Roddy in Florida working for FIP.
Okay.
And, you know, Roddy was a guy that, you know, I always say to guys in this business, man, nobody really gets anywhere unless somebody helps them. And Roddy was a guy that had really kind of, you know, stepped up for me. We'd had a couple matches, one, a stampede match or something like that. In Destin, Florida, where we wrestled into the stands and Roddy hit me in the face with a McDonald's cheeseburger and literally tried to stuff the cheeseburger up my nose. But there's, you know, that match got Roddy to kind of like walk over to Gabe afterwards. It was like, this kid's good. You know, he's really, really, you know,
yeah.
And that, you know, accompanied with, you know, other things that he did. Helped me get a look with Gabe. Helped me get a look with Ring of Honor. So, you know, Roddy and I really became friends, like really, really good friends. Once I got signed to Ring of Honor, we started traveling a whole lot.
You know, there was another guy that was, it was years in the making. I'm pretty sure it was probably 2010, 2011 at the time. Kenny's like, I really want this match. And it was with Scorpio Sky. And we actually booked the match and something happened and Scorpio Sky didn't make the show. But I guess about 7-8 years later, at the Mecca, we had Kenny King versus Scorpio Sky versus Chris Bay.
Yeah, the funny thing is, that's the second time that that happened. I think I was booked to wrestle Scorpio Sky in like the main event for like a PWG show early on. Huh. But our communication was bad because I had left. I was already like 2 weeks. I had already told him I couldn't make that booking, and I was already 2 weeks into like a tour of Europe with Chippendales. So I can remember kind of getting online and checking my email and seeing myself advertised, and that caused heat between me and Danny from PWG and whatnot. So that was the second time me and Sky up, because me and Sky, you know, chomping at the bit to wrestle each other, and it happened twice where it got canceled. And that was the second time that year we actually wrestled, because we wrestled for the ROH World TV Championship early on that same year that we wrestled in the three-way with Bay.
You know, how important is that to, when you see guys like Scorpio, to get a chance to work them a little bit? Is it in your mind, is it helping give them a little bit of a rub to advance them? Because even with SCU, you know, anyone who has wrestled in Southern California went through Chris Daniels at some point in their career. And for them to take, you know, Kaz and Chris to take Scorpio under their belt, is that something you recognize as important, that guys like that get that chance, get that rub? And, you know, obviously he can be a heavyweight champion, you know, within the next year or so.
Well, yeah. I mean, Sky and I, you know, broke in around the same time. We've literally kind of traveled around the same paths through our career. Right around the time that I got signed for TNA, that whole Destination X thing, there was a rumor that we both got signed because Sky was using the Mason Andrews name. And we were in that four-way. It was me, Sanjay, Zima, Ion, and Sky in that four-way to crown the X Division champion, the Ultimate X match. And people, the internet was like, oh, you know, Kenny King and Mason Andrews are signed, they're as good as signed. And I can remember texting Sky, like, did you get a deal? He said, no, did you? And I said, hell no. The internet's lying to everybody. So, you know, it's important for me to wrestle Sky because, you know, Sky's one of my contemporaries. He's a guy that's been, you know, who was SoCal legend and has, you know, grown on to make his name nationally. And, just like for the longest period of time, I'd never wrestled Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal had only been in one match together, and that was like me, Lethal, and Lance Hoyt against Team Canada in some random TNA pay-per-view in 2006. So it was important for me last year to like, hey, man, not only did I get to wrestle Jay Lethal once, I got to wrestle Jay Lethal four times last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, just be able to wrestle these guys who are, you know, your contemporaries and you know, whatever rub you get, but just be able to, I don't know, have those matches and have those experiences with those guys is important to me.
You know, that's a guy on our wish list. You know, Jay Lethal, super cool. You know, he was actually watching the Mecca show. He comes to the shows when he's in town. And, if you know, he's probably one of the top guys on my wish list to work for FSW.
That would be amazing. In the world, you know? Yeah. That would be an amazing opportunity. Joe, as we start to get close to wrapping up here, what are your thoughts on Kenny as a dad?
I think they missed the boat. I think Kenny should have been the next Bachelor with his daughter helping make the decisions on who he was going to go out with. Because, you know, she was giving Kenny the rub on that show.
Absolute truth. That would have been probably their best bet instead of what they went with. But you know, she gave me the rub as much as I gave her the rub on The Bachelorette. she was more, if you hear her tell it, she's more popular than me.
And believe me, we've missed out on a lot of Kenny King training sessions because he would have to deal with some issues with his daughter, because his daughter always comes first, which is totally understandable. You're going to be there tomorrow, right, by the way?
I will be there tomorrow. I'm in town this week. All right.
So. Kenny, I mean, how has, you know, you first come to Vegas to go to UNLV, and then you come back here establishing yourself and grow and having your daughter grow up here. What has Vegas meant to you and your daughter in terms of a family and a relationship and, you know, seeing her grow up here?
Well, you know, I don't know if you could ask most dads of daughters, would they like the daughter to grow up in Las Vegas? They'd probably be like, hell no. But, you know, as with any kid, you just try to do your best to provide your kid with the environment that's stable, that is conducive to growth. And, you know, no matter where you live in these days, if you live in Las Vegas or freaking Topeka, Kansas, right, the internet gives you exposure to everything.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can see the same stuff in Topeka as you can in Las Vegas. So for me, it's been just about, you know, exposing her to the things here that are, you know, productive and wholesome. Like, she before could never give a damn about pro wrestling and whatnot. But now every time that daddy does a show, she's like, oh, dad, can you take me to your show? So, you know, now, you know, she's, for years, though, even though she didn't care, everybody was, you know, oh, Kenzie, and every, you know, all of our fans would definitely treat her, you know, show her so much love. So now that she's starting to kind of embrace it a little bit, she's starting to see that, you know, pro wrestling is a community here, and all the other things that we do is a community, you know, versus all of the technical, the cliched Vegas things. There's so much more that we do here other than any of that.
Is there any chance we'll see her train?
You are crazy. Absolutely not. You're absolutely nuts.
Famous last words there.
And I would say that, if she was a boy, if I could help it, no kid of mine would get in this business.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
So, you know, Kenny, in your memories, is there anything that stands out as one of your favorite or funniest Joe DeFalco stories?
Let me think. Joe, you got anything? Anything that would trigger me? I'm trying to think.
Well, yeah, the first one to me, if I had to say one about you, was the one about Rush. I just remember, I don't think we were doing live commentary, so I was in the back, and I remember you just, like, walking to the back and like, this motherfucker, he fucked up his own comeback.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's favorite Kenny King story. I just keep, for me, the first thing that comes up, and it's not just like a funny story for me, it's just every time Greg Romero loses his shit, I keep waiting for Joe to just turn into Incredible Hulk and just knock his ass out, and it just never happens. So one of these days, Joe's just going to say, fuck this shit, and he's going to just knock Greg Romero out of his tight jeans. It's just like, I keep thinking one of these days it's going to happen.
Joe, are we going to ever see a Greg Romero-Joe DeFalco match?
Most likely not. Maybe Rocky T versus Greg Romero, you know, in a biker on a pole match, you know?
Any final thoughts, Joe, on anything about Kenny and about what he's meant to you and FSW?
You know, we always talk about the Hall of Fame, and, you know, Kenny's in there, you know, with the haters, but, you know, without a doubt, Kenny King would be one of the first people inducted, not only for the FSW, but for the Las Vegas Wrestling Hall of Fame. But even though he's been around 20 years, he's still as active can be. And I feel it's a disservice to put him in the Hall of Fame right now. Because when you think of, hey, who's in the Hall of Fame? It's usually retired guys. You know, people are way past their prime. And it's crazy that Kenny is still going strong, you know, after, you know, the initial debut with Lance Escalade. It's really crazy to see where we all have gone in 20 years. It's crazy to think back, you know, in Rush's facility that you could barely fit people, and we're trying to run this TV taping, and we got all these guys who, like, within 5 years got signed. But now you look 20 years later to see where these people are at, and, you know, it's crazy. But the fact of the matter is, out of all those guys, Kenny King is still, you know, riding strong, you know. And, you know, it's great to have him on board. He's always been a loyal guy. He's always been helpful when we need it. You know, I always yap at him for not texting me that he wasn't going to make it to training one day. But, you know, you got to outweigh the good with the bad. So, you know, 90% of the time, it's great. And it's just, you know, every once in a while, he's very forgetful. Like, the students know he wasn't coming before me half the time.
And, Kenny, any final thoughts on your relationship with Joe DeFalco and what it's meant to be part of FSW?
You know, having known Joe for as long as I've known him, it's just, it's easy. We have an easy relationship. We get along, you know, even on tough subjects or whatnot, we can speak plainly with one another and come to usually common ground. He's not going to mince words. He is going to backhanded compliment you and sugarcoat shit on you. As every so often when he's got stuff to say, but what he has meant to Las Vegas, and, you know, no shit, people call him this, I call him this, and some people call him this, you know, as a joke. But he's, as far as I'm concerned, he is a Vegas of Vince, because, or the Vince of Las Vegas, because there was nothing happening. There was no, this was a dead town for pro wrestling before Joe DeFalco said, let's see what we can do. And it's not just when Joe DeFalco said, let's see what we can do, and then the indies came here. You got to start looking at now how the fact that Las Vegas is a regular stop for every major professional wrestling company on the face of the earth. There's a period of time where ROH, WWE, Impact, whatever that guy's name up in Oregon, PPW, there was all of these people filming at Sam's Town because Joe DeFalco led the way and FSW led the way. And they were, people were seeing what, when you put 600-700 people in that building, how it looks like 1,000, how it looks like 1,500. Yeah. And that would have never been possible if FSW hadn't done that. So I give shit to the students all the time. Like, you guys get to wrestle in a casino once a month. Like, you bastards have no idea. We were in the FSW, the UFW, UWF arena, 108 degrees with 40 people in there, and the only time we saw a casino was when we stepped outside because the Rio was right there. So you know, the evolution of the game is incredible, and, you know, the talent that appreciates it, the talent that works, you know, they make it all worthwhile, and they're part of the reason why you know, we go to Sam's Town and we have these things. And, you know, I don't know when we'll go back to Mesquite, but I'd like to do that too, Joe, when Stars Collide 3 would be dope.
Yeah, no, I definitely would love to do that. And it always reminds me, I remember Kenny walking into, I believe it was Sam's Town the first time. And it was like, wow, this venue is better than a lot of the venues we perform at Ring of Honor. And, you know, It is amazing what we have accomplished. And, you know, to me, it's been a long time, but to a lot of people, it's like, wow, you've done all this in a short period of time, you know, 10, 11 years. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the pricks at Sam's Town have never bought me a steak dinner. Can you believe that, Kenny?
I mean, they're trying to charge you. You're the one that brought them into the business. They're going to charge you. You thinking they're going to give you a steak dinner?
You know, I got to pull teeth to get a fucking buffet.
I mean, God forbid if I needed a room. Thank God I live here.
You know, Christ. But, you know, and Kenny's 100% correct. You know, I was also the guy making calls and trying to get Impact in here where, you know, in all honesty, a lot of promoters would feel threatened that all these other companies are coming in. And I want these to come in because I wanted to work with the companies bigger than us because it would help us be bigger. And maybe more wrestling fans would know who we are. The most difficult thing is, especially in a town like Las Vegas, it is a big town, but it's also so transient that there's so many people in and out that it's really difficult to have people know about a company like ours unless we put in the time and effort. And I think we've done a great job with that.
Absolutely. And I want to encourage anyone listening, please check out the Twitch channel for FSW. Check out Fight TV. Check out YouTube. You'll get a chance to see some of Kenny's work, including his tag team championship win. And also, you know, we didn't talk about Ring of Honor because it's focused on FSW here, but I do want to encourage listeners, please, Ring of Honor is starting to tape again. If you haven't been watching, get ready to start watching because there's going to be some good stuff going on. You know, lots of love and 100% behind Ring of Honor. And if you haven't joined the Honor Club, please do that. You'll be able to go back and watch Kenny's matches with that as well. And
The good news is on channel 3.1, 2, 3, and 4, you can watch Ring of Honor like 18 hours a day.
Get it in. Get it all in.
And we appreciate everything, Kenny. Thank you so much for joining us. And Joe, thank you once again for being here. This is the 20th episode, so we've been doing this for 20 weeks now. Still number one, Joe. And
did you ever doubt that?
No. In fact, I think that now we just got to find out what niche, what country you're most popular in. Is it the United States or are you? I know we got a huge following in India, so you could also be the Vince McMahon of India one day.
That sounds good. I'm just happy to know, Kenny, that my episode had more listeners than the Derwin the Destroyer episode. So,
really? That's surprising. Back. Derwin the Destroyer. I thought that'd be a big draw.
That's what I'm saying. That's how popular I am.
Well, on that note, that's a perfect place to end. Everyone, thank you for listening. And remember to download, share, listen, review, and subscribe to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting, and especially a shout out to listening to the DeFalco Files. Everyone who listens, thank you so much, and we'll see you again next week.